welcome to the Pre-Post Film Review. I'm Matt Stevenson.
And I'm John Asquith. And this is our end-of-year wrap-up episode.
Annual end-of-year wrap-up.
Yeah, exactly. Coming to you early in the next year. You know, you get busy around Christmas and New Year's and family commitments and travel and all that stuff. So, you know, we finally managed to get some time and sync up our schedules and have a think about all the little movies we saw last year and
put
them in our usual categories, which are, if this is your first time listening, our sort of wrap-up categories are best film, favorite film, best trailer, worst trailer, and then honourable and dishonourable mentions. That's sort of what we go through.
Yeah.
Traditionally, we sort of keep this episode a little more loose. We try and maybe guess the other person's answer for each category, or choice for each category. And it's usually pretty fun episode. So I'm sorry if this one's not in advance. So I think you're going to go first, Matt, right? And so I guess we should
We
probably don't need to explain this, but the difference between best and favorite is so favorite film can be a movie that really speaks to you sort of personally or emotionally, and you know it's not the best made perhaps, but it just sort of really got to you this year. And best film is something that could be the opposite, that perhaps didn't move you, but you can see the craftsmanship or the filmmaking or what it did for the industry or something like that.
Very well put.
Thank you. Let's go to best film for our first category.
Sure.
And Matt, this year is, I feel like in previous years we've had a real clear-cut winner. Or at least a couple of choices that I was pretty confident on.
Yeah.
This year, there's lots of stuff that we've really liked, but I'm having a hard time pinpointing what you're going to choose for each category. So for best film, on a logical level, I'm going to say that you probably might pick Dunkirk because it is... an exercise in filmmaking, really. It's almost a silent film, and it's experimental in many ways, which we talked about in our episode, and not at all a traditional war film. It's obsessed with editing and time, and also has fantastic cinematography. So that would be my guess for your best film. Let's hear
what you've chosen. Well, John, you are bang on the money. Yes.
Hey, nice.
Was my pick for best film of the year for all the reasons you just said. I think it is the most confidently made, most well-crafted sort of cinematic experience. Also, just for what it represents in terms of practical filmmaking and... for the industry in general, like shooting on film using celluloid, obviously there's lots of CGI hidden in there, but Nolan is obsessed with practically doing things, actually having a ship that turns over in the water practically, and practical planes that crash into the ocean and things. Like, I think it's important that we have a filmmaker and films like this still being made, because they're a rarity these days. But I think more importantly, like exactly what you just said, the craft of this film is impeccable. It is almost nothing but pure filmmaking in the purest sense. You know, there's hardly any narrative, there's hardly any character, there's hardly any dialogue. It is, the whole film hinges on the filmmaking, the editing and the pacing and the music. It's just so successful in all those things. And it's grown on me. I've seen it a couple of times now since we reviewed it, and we were very positive on it in our review. But I think, it's grown on me since then. And it is, potentially, I think we even said this in the review, it could potentially be his best film in terms of it being the purest expression of cinema that he's made. Even if I personally love some of the other stuff that he's done a bit more, maybe this could be his, like, quote-unquote best film.
Yes.
So, yeah. Well done. You know me too well, John.
I really didn't know then. So I'm glad I got that. Okay. We've definitely been podcasting for a while, and I mean, we're always on the same wavelength, actually, now that I think about it. So it's not that surprising. But I agree with everything you said then, and I think it's on my list for sure. I've got three films.
Three potentials.
Three potentials, and that's one of them.
Well, before you tell us, let me have a guess of what other potentials it could be. Well, yeah, I assume Dunkirk would be one of them, but given that you've just picked that for me... I think Dunkirk's the most obvious pick, or, you know, the clearest example of pure filmmaking, if that's the sort of criteria for this category. So I think it's hard to pick... This is a difficult category to pick other stuff. But if I had to choose one, I would perhaps say you might go with, for similar reasons, Baby Driver, because it is, again... kinetic energy about the filmmaking. I think you, from memory on the podcast, you liked it a bit more than I did. I really did like it, but I didn't love it, perhaps given my high expectations and my love for Edgar Wright. I know you liked it a lot, and it, even though I don't think it's his best work, it is probably his best work in terms of filmmaking. Like, the whole thing is basically edited to music in a way that I've never seen before in a film. It's pretty incredible. So yeah, my guess would be Baby Driver. Am I close? Is that on the list?
It's on my list in general, Matt, but it is not under my best film list. Interesting. I'm sorry to say. So, although hearing your explanation then, I'm like, thinking maybe I should have put it on there. So that is a good guess. I think, you know, staying in the best film sort of rules that we have, I'm actually going to pick Blade Runner 2049.
Interesting.
Because I think it is just a feat of filmmaking, particularly cinematography and design, and was the movie that probably blew me away the most in terms of visuals this year, in 2017. I think And you could pause that movie at any moment and, like, hang that... Whatever that frame is, you could hang it up on your wall and it would just look stunning. This is a movie that we thought would be impossible, couldn't be made, and if it was, it would be a big mistake, and it manages to exceed all those expectations. And whilst honouring the original film really sort of creates its own tone as well and its own visual style, while feeling like it exists in the same universe. I think Denis Villeneuve is just one of the greatest directors working in Hollywood at the moment, in terms of his storytelling and visual sense. It's not often that you can combine those strengths so masterfully as he's able to do. And I still think about certain images from that film and how just so freaking stylish, but with substance behind it as well. So yeah, that's my pick for best film. It's not my favorite for those reasons as well. I didn't really connect with it emotionally. But I just admire it so much for the craftsmanship. That was, a big choice for me.
Yeah, definitely. I obviously agree with everything you just said. We were gushing over it in our review. I had that pegged perhaps for your favourite, so you've fucking ruined that guess already. but for similar reasons, because it was so thematically rich, as well as being visually stunning. So I knew that would be, I was confident that would be up there on some part of your list, but that makes sense hearing you describe the filmmaking style and how it connected for you.
Yep.
Good choice. Very good choice, John.
Yeah, and to you. I think we both chose very well. Pat on the back to each of us. So moving on, folks, we've come to favourite film. This one's a little harder to predict, I think, because movies work in mysterious ways. They can impact you in different ways. And just picking something that's well made isn't necessarily going to take the top spot here. Fire up, Matt.
It's a toughie.
I really don't know for this one.
Let's have a stab.
I think Last Jedi is probably up there for how much that surprised us and you in particular, and how, mm-hmm. how much you really jumped on board that movie. It could also be Split, and I know that really floored you. The way it sort of expanded its universe and surprised you when you mm-hmm. Were least expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, I don't know. I'm going to go with... I'm going to take the easy option out and go with Blade Runner 2049 for all these reasons that we just talked about. That's my guess for you.
Good guess, but not correct. That is my number two film. This is a bit of a cheat. I don't think you would be able to get this because it's not a film that we've potted on. And I don't think we've actually even spoken about it because I don't think you've seen it. So I don't want to say too much. But my favourite film of 2017 was A Ghost Story. So it is the little film by... Hang on, I need to click his link. It's a little film by David Lowry, who just did Pete's Dragon and then kind of secretly shot this tiny, low-budget film with Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara just for sort of for fun, you know, just with his mates. And it's just incredible, John. And again, I don't want to say too much because I know you haven't seen it. And for listeners who haven't seen it as well, I think the best thing is to go in cold. Not that it's full of big plot twists or anything like that, but it's just discovering the sense of discovery and realizing what the film is about is sort of a wonderful little journey to go on. And it is a very small film. But it's unlike anything thing I'd ever seen in a small, subtle way. It's just, again, without giving anything away, it's kind of just about this couple who live in a house that may or may not be haunted, and uses that as this little springboard to kind of explore things you wouldn't really expect, like not only relationships and the you know, what it is to love someone, but also kind of our sense of time and memory. Mm. And it, like, I presume you've seen the sort of key image of, like, the ghost, which is just someone wearing a bed sheet with eyes in it, cut out of it.
Mm.
And it kind of has this, like, little twinkle of humour, you know, somehow manages to make this silly image of a ghost poignant and moving while also being funny, like not hilarious. I mean, it's quite a melancholy, thoughtful film, but it has this little sense of humor that trickles through it. That's just surprising and cool. And I was lucky enough to see it at a preview screening with David Lowry doing a Q&A afterwards. And one of the most impressive things that I remember from that is him talking about after they'd finished the film, like how to sell it, because it's such a odd little film. And he said they had a very serious discussion at one point about marketing it as a children's film, because there's no content in it that would, you know, it's like a G-rated film, basically. There's nothing adult, quote-unquote. But it just made me think and appreciate it so much more that it is probably one of the most... not sophisticated, but thoughtful and adult film, like for adults, but there's nothing offensive in it at all. You know, a kid could sit down and watch it. I mean, they probably wouldn't pick up on the themes and they'd probably find it boring, but you know, like there's something I admire about that and something lovely. I don't know. It's a great, great little film. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. And John, go watch it.
Mm. I know. It's on my list, and I'm really, really dying to see it, and even more so now that you've picked it. I never would have guessed that because we purposely didn't talk about it. Yeah,
exactly. It's a bit unfair.
Man, I'll watch that very soon, and we can have a chat about it.
Definitely. And it just makes me excited for David Lowry in general. Like, even his Pete's Dragon remake was really good, I thought. I think he's a good filmmaker. And again, I'm not excited. He's doing another Disney film next. Like, he's doing Peter Pan, I think, which I'm not excited about because of the content, but having his name on it makes me curious. You know, I'm...
Yes.
Because I've sort of felt the same way about Pete's Dragon, and it turned out to be really good, so...
Mm.
Yeah. He's just a very interesting filmmaker, I think. Now, I have to pick your favourite, and I have no idea, because I was going to pick Blade Runner, and now... I think, I mean, like you said, this is a very hard one to pick because it is such a personal pick, and like A Ghost Story, it is often things that we haven't chatted about on the pod or things that, you know, we haven't chatted about in general if one of us hasn't seen. In terms of what I was thinking for you, I mean, similarly, the same stuff you were talking about for my picks, The Last Jedi maybe, but I think I liked it a bit more than you, so probably not your favourite of the year. You didn't connect with Split as much as I did. Dunkirk, I suppose, again, we both really liked it, but from memory it was more formally appreciating it than loving the film itself. Similar with War of the Planet of the Apes, I think, again, I perhaps liked that a little bit more than you. So I genuinely don't know, John, but I'm just going to like take a stab in the dark and go with, Mother, because I know you really like that. And it's like an interesting, weird little film. I feel like it connected with you a bit more than it did with me, maybe from memory. Probably completely wrong, but it's here on my list of films that I liked, so maybe it's your favourite too. Tell me how wrong I was.
That is a really good guess. That's on my list. And this is a hard category for me, because there's so many films I loved, but not... I mean, there is one that stands out, which I'll name in a second. In like 2 hours, it could change again. You know what I mean? They're all very close. But I think, and I don't know. I'm sticking to this because I've got it here on my thing as the chosen one. My favorite film actually was a film I saw at the Melbourne International Film Festival this year called The Lost City of Z.
John, good pick. I had that on my list too, but I didn't even think of that. Yeah, good pick. Mm.
It was completely surprising to me. I went in not having seen the trailer, having no expectations other than I was just interested in the storyline. And hearing some sort of faint buzz that was good and sort of classical in its filmmaking and quite interesting. And so I think that helped, not having huge expectations and not knowing. And the movie is, I mean, lots of people might watch it and think it's kind of tedious or boring, but it really sunk its claws into me, and it follows the real life story of Percy Fawcett, who was a British explorer. He goes into the Amazon in the 19th century, I guess it is, and becomes obsessed and convinced that there's a lost city of Zed, he calls it, out there, and wants to find it and become this sort of archaeological hero and sort of consumes his life. And much like his obsession with the jungle, I found this movie, I spent time away from it, and it kept... moments from it kept playing over in my head, and I haven't seen it again, but I'm very keen to. And it's very slowly paced. It's very it takes time to breathe for the characters to develop. It's not in a rush. It's not interested in selling itself to the largest crowd. I really appreciate that. I think that's sort of a style of filmmaking that I like quite a bit. I never would have even thought this after I first saw it. It was, as I say, as time went on and as I talked about it with you, that I really appreciated what it was trying to do and go for, and the hints of surrealism in it, which is another thing that you and me sort of strangely latch onto a lot, Matt, is these sort of touches of weirdness to films without going too over the top. It just really sort of spoke to me, I guess. That's why I think I had to choose it. Yeah.
And looks great, like shot on 35mm, like it's a
beautiful
looking film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really, really one of the best looking films of the year, I'd say. Just, again, it has that classic feel because it is shot on 35 and obviously a period piece, and it just feels, makes the whole thing feel more real and, yeah, adds some nice depth to it.
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad you chose that. I feel like that's a film that I really loved as well, but just in general feels like it's been a bit lost or forgotten throughout the year. Like, I think critics really liked it, or a lot of people did when it first appeared, but then it sort of just vanished. I love that we're giving it a bit of love. That's well deserved, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so we're going to move on now to Best Trailer. And this is an interesting category because maybe the movie sucks, but there was something effective about the editing or the sort of construction of this trailer. Sometimes we talk about how trailers can be like little shorts themselves, and so we sort of try to do this category to point out trailers that we liked. I just really have no idea for this one.
It's a really tough category.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna go sort of back to your best film and say Dunkirk, which was had quite a good teaser with the stopwatch. And there's just the sparse shots of the...
the bland shots of the beach.
Yeah, bland, boring shots. The sparse shots of the beach, empty, and just then that sort of really inventive shot of all the soldiers, you know, waiting on the pier and just looking up at the sound of a plane. I thought that was a really good teaser anyway, so I'm going to choose that for you.
Good choice. Not the trailer I picked, but...
Okay.
Agree with everything you said, and I that is definitely in the conversation and probably would have been my second choice, but the trailer that I've gone for is, I sound like a broken record, but it is Baby Driver. And I think, I mean, I guess this is a little bit of a cheat in that a lot of the energy of the trailer is just because of the film itself. You know, it borrows moments from the film, and has that kinetic push that the film itself does. But I just think it's also just a really well-edited trailer in itself. Like, it the way it links together the beats of the music, again, as the film did, but within its own little arc of the trailer, is really cool. And it's probably the trailer that got me the most excited about a film of last year. Just... leading up to, you know, knowing Edgar Wright was doing a new film and not sort of having an idea of what it was going to be like, and then being able to see how well he was combining the music and image in such a fun, inventive way made me super excited and gave me, or maybe too excited, but really sold the film and did a good job of representing what the film was like to an extent, yes. I suppose. And, you know, obviously worked. It was such a huge success, that film, surprisingly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like Edgar Wright is heavily involved, if not editing the trailers himself, he seems to be heavily involved in all the marketing and everything. So I feel like it has his DNA in it, which is always a good thing. So yeah, Baby Driver is my choice.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent choice. And in hindsight... an obvious one that I should have picked for you. that was very stylish. As you say, it represented the film very well. It's like a condensed version of it. You knew exactly what you were in for when you saw the final film, but without spoiling too much either, which is always a big thing.
Again, I have utterly no idea what you're going to pick, John. It's really tough. I feel like there's probably, within the podcast at least, there's probably two trailers that we really liked, and they were Dunkirk and Baby Driver. I think they were the ones that we probably commented on specifically in episode about how much we liked them or how good they were put together. But I won't pick one of those. I won't pick one of those, but I will do a boring pick and...
okay.
Go Blade Runner 2049, because I think that was a really good teaser. It didn't give away any plot, but it represented the mood of the film very well and got us excited and thinking about what it could be.
Yes.
Without spoiling anything. But yeah, what would you pick?
Well, Matt, you're bang on the money, actually, this time around. Blade Runner 2049, the first teaser, I guess you'd call it, that we got. Not the most inventive teaser, you know, especially compared to the Baby Driver trailer. But for all the reasons you just mentioned, just gave us a taste of what was to come and didn't spoil anything at all. And I really appreciated that. It was also our first look at this new sort of evolved world of Blade Runner. And it was, you know, the same reason that I picked it for best film. It was just instantly, you know, a visual feast for the eyes. We had a little bit of synth score over the top, some sort of moody shots of Ryan Gosling walking through, in particular, that sort of desert area. And I just thought it showed that they were on the right track and that we perhaps didn't have much to worry about. And also sort of made me extremely excited to see where they were going to go with all this and wanted to see more. So, I think, you know, in past years, I've probably picked more inventive trailers, but in terms of what we got this year, I mean, Dunkirk was very close. Mm. I mean, that I considered that for a long time as well. But Blade Runner this time around.
Yeah, good pick. And also, I mean, I guess it would have been cool to not know Harrison Ford was in it, but I mean, he's splashed over all the marketing, so you couldn't avoid that. But in a weird way, it's kind of like subversive in that it presents him up front when realistically he like doesn't appear in the film until the very tail end, which was potentially detrimental in terms of mainstream audiences because they were expecting a big Harrison Ford action film when really he's just like spends the whole film being grumpy and then getting captured in the third act. But I kind of like that. I like that it's...
Yeah, it's sleight of hand a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it made the watching the film a little more refreshing. Yeah. Although, you know, you were sitting there a lot like, oh, they still haven't got to have
exactly. Okay.
Those are our picks for best trailer. And now we go on to the old negative side of things. And worst trailer. So again, could be the technical side, could be the spoilery side. I have not much of an idea for this one.
No.
I mean, there's plenty of bad movies this year that we talked about, but I don't specifically remember a trailer being horrendous. I think probably wasn't last year, might have even been the year before we picked The Martian, which was a great film, but the trailer gave away way too much.
It was like 3 minutes long that gave away the entire plot of the film.
We didn't have a front runner like that this year. So I'm just going to take a stab in the dark at a movie we didn't like, and therefore the trailer wasn't great. And that's The Dark Tower. Trailer.
That is a very, very good pick, and that should be my pick, but I'd forgotten about it. Because that is a stinker of a trailer, and really... Well, I mean, it's a stinker of a film as well, you're right. It probably represents the film well, but it made it very clear that the film did not know how to adapt that source material. That was bad. This is a tough category because, like you said, it can be multiple things. It can be, did it misrepresent the film? Was it just a badly made trailer or constructed trailer? I'm almost tempted to give it to Baby Driver just because I feel like it showed too much of the film and that led to my disappointment afterwards. But I don't think that's fair because it is such a good trailer. I think that's more of a flaw of the film itself. Like, the actual car chases are so front-heavy in the film that the third act doesn't live up to them. That's perhaps not a fault of the trailer.
I think the podcast would implode if you chose best and worst trailer.
Exactly. So I'm going to go... I mean, your logic is sound, and I'm going to go with pretty much the same thing, but just not the Dark Tower as what you picked, and that's going to be Kong Skull Island, because that is a fucking turd of a film, and it just annoys me that the striking visuals that they happen to conjure were cut together in a trailer that made it look good or sold it to people when it was like a hollow piece of crap. I mean, again, it's a symptom of the film itself, but I think this is a weird example where, you know, the film itself is almost a trailer. It is just like you said, Instagram vignettes of like over stylized, hyper saturated locations and action sort of just mushed together with 60s Vietnam War music cliche crap put in between. And it lends itself to being edited into a trailer and sold because people see the striking visuals and get suckered into thinking it's actually a good film when it's a stinker. So yeah.
Very good.
Skull Island is my pick, and please say I have not seen that again since we reviewed it on the podcast.
It makes watch me it every very night. Angry.
But then this leaves me in a position where I have no idea what you're going to pick, because they are probably the two stinkers of the year that we really didn't like. I'm going to go out on a limb a little and just say you may pick the trailer for The Last Jedi, just because I know we, not the teaser, but the full trailer, which we didn't actually talk about on the pod, but we've talked about off pod. And I remember you being a bit miffed by it, a bit baffled, and didn't think it was well edited. And it sort of misrepresents things, which could be seen as a positive, but potentially also a negative. And maybe not. It led to people being disappointed with the film as well, maybe. I don't know. So yeah.
Yes.
Last Jedi is my pick.
I think that's a really good pick, and there is a good discussion to be had about that, because I didn't like that trailer, and I didn't watch it until after I'd seen the film. And it just felt a bit off to me. But, you know, I have to be honest and boring and say that I had pre-chosen Kong Skull Island as my best trailer for the exact same reasons. In that it did suggest that the movie would be cool and fun, and have some really interesting cinematography. But that was, as you say, just picking those shots from the movie, which was the movie was a trailer. It was full of ADD filmmaking that had no substance to the style. And, I think tricked a lot of people into seeing that film and really infuriated you and me.
Yeah.
And so I have to give it worst trailer for this, the exact same reasons that you mentioned. I think
good pick.
We were angry.
Yeah.
Watching that. I remember specifically, I think I was in the review, like kind of writhing in my seat in the cinema. For that film, and the trailer is the same thing, the same problems. So
I agree, obviously.
Yeah. Another one I did consider for that section was The Mummy, Tom Cruise. You know, the trailer wasn't terrible, but it did have that hilarious release where it was just the sound.
That's true.
Of the dialogue or whatever.
And Tom Cruise grunting like the copy and screaming and paste. Or whatever.
Tom Cruise screaming. And, you know, just on a technical level, that's not great that they released that.
So. And it does spoil a huge plot thing about him, like, being the mummy.
Yes.
Coming back from the dead. That is a good, that's a good pick. I've forgotten about that.
Mm.
All right.
Well, that's the main sort of section of our year in review.
Yeah.
And, I think we've made some good picks there, Matt.
Yeah.
It's always, I like hearing each other explain our choices, and it makes me really want to either rewatch or see these films again.
Definitely.
So we're sort of up to the mentions now, and I guess we'll go with honorable mentions first. And this is stuff, again, maybe that we didn't talk about on the pod. Probably a lot of it is because we can only fit so many episodes in a year. And stuff you'd like to highlight that that didn't quite fit into these categories.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been pretty good, a pretty good year. Like, I'm looking at my list. I made a little list on Letterboxd of my favourite films of the year, and there's, like, good stuff in there. Stuff that we've already talked about. You know, like I said, Blade Runner was right up there. You were right about The Last Jedi. I've got that sort of, like, number three. I've just had so much fun with that film, and the more I think about it, the more I appreciate it. I think it grows on me constantly. Same with Dunkirk. One that I really think people should check out that's very high on my list is My Life as a Courgette, or My Life as a Zucchini, depending on where you are in the world. A beautiful little stop-motion film, which was my favourite film of the year until sort of the end, when a couple of these bigger ones pipped it. It's just a beautiful... Make sure you see the French version too, the original language, not the dub. But yeah, it's just sweet and unique and melancholy and short. Like, I think it's only like 70 minutes or something. Really good. Really good little film. Call Me By Your Name, I recently caught up with, is very high on my list. As I was watching it, I really liked it, but didn't love it. But then there's the ending of that film is really sucker punched me and put it high up on my best of the year list. It's just a lovely little romance that doesn't have a lot of these sort of gay romance films have this looming sense of their relationship being frowned upon, or they have to keep it hidden, or, you know, there's something that's going to destroy it. But it's none of that. It's just this, like, beautiful summer these two men have together. And this palpable sense of, like, summer in Italy, where everyone's kind of just lounging in the sun and eating apricots, and it's just it's beautiful. It's so nice. Also, a couple of big films from last year that didn't get releases here or in Australia until this year, so like Moonlight and Manchester by the Sea were technically 2017 films for us, so they were on my list. War of the Planet of the Apes made it on there, even though I didn't love it as much as the others, I suppose. I think it's really, really good. Also, The Red Turtle, which was that sort of Ghibli produced or something, or like they outsourced to like the French animation studio or something. They're involved somehow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think they did sort of the storyboards and some of the animation. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great little strange sort of almost silent animated film that I really, really loved.
Another one I'm dying to see. Yeah. That annoyed that I haven't seen it before we've done this list.
Yeah, I think it probably would be there. That's kind of it. That rounds out my top 10. Like, other little mensch baby drivers, they're somewhere not quite in my top 10. Silence, the Scorsese film I really appreciated. Mother, Split, Lost City of Zed, and that Casting JonBenet, the Netflix documentary. I really like that. That's not often a doco makes my best of the year list, unfortunately. But this one, I've got it like about 13, so just outside of my top 10. Yeah, lots of good stuff. What about you? Any honourable mentions for you, John?
There's a lot of crossover with what you've talked about. Dunkirk, obviously, we've mentioned a lot. That's very high on my list. Mother is very high for me as well. Really, really enjoyed that film. Last Jedi, same thing. Surprising, The Journey, we talked about, you know, how I wasn't sure what to think of it at first, and then upon a second viewing, it really sunk into me, and I'm very positive on it now. A huge one that appeared in a lot of my other categories was the film Raw, which we talked about at the start of the year. That was another one that really connected with me, and I loved the filmmaking. I loved the story elements, thematic side of it, the acting, the editing. That was in my both best and favorite film sections.
Forgotten about that.
Very high up there. I had forgotten about it the last sort of second half of the year. There's so much other stuff that we saw that I'd forgotten. And I looked back at my list and I was like, oh my God, yeah, this was amazing. Planet of the Apes, yes, definitely. Admired Silence as well. Mm-hmm. As a Stephen King fanboy, It was a pleasant surprise. Not the best thing ever, but certainly enjoyable. And this is cheating because it's not a release at all from this year, but we did a bonus episode on Eraserhead from David Lynch. And that's honestly, I'd put that in one of my categories if I could. But it's a little old now to be considered my release. But for me personally, that was definitely a highlight of the year. So that's up there.
Cool.
And we've kind of talked about the disappointments and the duds with Dark Tower, Kong, and Mummy in the trailer section. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that that you can think of or elaborate on?
Yeah, so no other big disappointments, really, I don't think. I think we're usually pretty good at picking stuff that, you know, avoiding the stinkers. I mean, we didn't see some of the bigger films that were meant to be terrible, like Justice League and all that. We kind of avoided. I guess maybe Thor Ragnarok was a little bit of a disappointment in that it wasn't kind of as subversive or different. I mean, it was still fun, but it didn't kind of like blow open the Marvel universe.
Sort of hoped for a bit more.
Yeah. That's all I can sort of think of off the top of my head. What about you?
No, I can't think of any others other than those big duds that we talked about. Certainly, you know, from our lists so far, it seems like there was more to be celebrated and happy about, which is a good thing. You know, the fact that we're struggling to think of some other disappointments, I think, means that 2017 was a pretty good year.
Yeah, definitely.
So our last little section is little coffee boy. Our last little section is looking ahead to 2018 and some of the films we're anticipating this year, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that sort of comes to mind that you're quite curious to see this year?
I'm super excited for Annihilation, which I think we probably mentioned last year because I think it was meant to come out in 2017 and it's still not out. It is worrying that it has sort of been dumped on Netflix, which makes me a little concerned. But, I loved Ex Machina. I've read the book, Annihilation, that it's based on, so and I really like that. So my hopes are still high. Hopefully it gets a small cinema release somewhere because I prefer to see it on a big screen than watch it at home on Netflix, but we'll see. I am quietly hopeful for the new Spielberg film, Ready Player One, just because it's a new Spielberg film. That's always exciting. Yeah. I'm actually really excited to see the new Wes Anderson film, Isle of Dogs, because it is stop motion, and Fantastic Mr. Fox is potentially my favourite Wes Anderson film. So having him back in the stop motion world is mega, mega exciting. I'm amped for that. We get a new Star Wars film. I guess that could potentially be exciting, but given that it's a Han Solo backstory, I'm kind of more annoyed than excited about that, but curious, I suppose. What about you? Any big films that you're amped for?
You stole most of mine. I Love Dogs is definitely up there. Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, because of the stop motion animation, it just looks beautiful and funny and, you know, stylistically amazing.
Mm-hmm.
A big curiosity is definitely the Han Solo film. Annihilation's up there, purely based on Ex Machina and how that movie was just so, so good. Another curiosity, I guess, is The Incredibles 2. I don't think it needs to be made, but I've got faith in Brad Bird, although he's sort of doing the Andrew Stanton and coming back
after a stinker of a live action.
After Tomorrowland, a bit of a stinker, and sort of retreating back to what he knows well. And so I don't know. I hope that's good. I'm sure there's plenty of others that aren't coming to mind right now. And this is sort of a yearly broken record that I think we both say, but the surprises. I'm looking forward to those little film festival surprises that come up every year. You know, for me this year, I guess it was The Lost City of Zed, and you know, stuff like that that you have no idea is coming and that blow you away. So
definitely,
yeah, that's always a good thing.